Sleeves.
I already got some. I also got some to fit our passports. Identity Stronghold has secure sleeves for sale right on the internet at idstronghold.com.
idstronghold.com?
Right. Or you can call them at 1-800-610-2770.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and of course our guest today certainly is William Grigg, and we're really talking about what's happening financially, and of course William is using the analogy of a black hole, and of course
yeah.
The black hole sucks everything down into it so the light can't get out, and you pick up the story.
Exactly. A black hole, of course, is the last phase of a dying star, according to the prevailing astrophysical model. And what happens is that it begins to collapse in on itself, and the gravitational attraction grows geometrically. And there's this point of no return called an event horizon. And once any object or any form of matter or energy has passed that point of no return, it is irrevocably committed to fall down into the depths of the black hole, which, I guess, in principle, goes on for infinity. And what we're facing right now, according to Mr. Kunstler, who's one of the better analysts of the economy, is that America is pretty much past the event horizon in terms of the collapse of our financial system, because we've got our government, has got us into a situation where it is going to have to start feeding this metastasizing monster of hyperinflation in order to keep the financial system running. Just on Monday, actually it was on Sunday, that Mr. Paulson made the announcement that now the federal government is going to be backstopping Fannie and Freddie, these two FDR-generated engines of mortgage debt. Fannie Mae was created back in the days of the New Deal, 1938. I mean, basically, its useful life is 70 years, you know, 70. And then Freddie Mac was a spin-off of Fannie Mae that achieved independent life under LBJ in his Great Society and was officially brought into existence during Nixon's first term. And these two so-called government-sponsored entities have always been backed implicitly, but not explicitly in their charters, interestingly enough, by the full faith and credit of the United States government. And they've been involved in buying up mortgage debt, all and sundry mortgage debt from basically everybody, any kind of debt that can be generated, no matter its quality or its reliability in terms of the creditors to pay it, or the debtors, rather, to pay it back. And back in 1989, as Congress was just barely starting to address the huge mess that was made during the S&L crisis of the 1980s, Congress created changes in the charters of Fannie and Freddie that greatly emancipated their ability to go out and buy up mortgage loans and repackage them as bonds for the secondary market. And as a result, during the 1990s, at the same time that Alan Greenspan was putting these huge injections of what is called liquidity into the financial markets, that's, of course, nothing more or less than inflation, bogus, spurious, useless fiat dollars, usually created in terms of either paper money that has no backing or even just digital, virtual, so-called money. You had Fannie and Freddie buying up all the bad loans that were being issued by mortgage lenders, and then repackaged them as bonds. They'd put out various tranches of bonds, and these packages would include some bonds that would be good and a lot of bad bonds that would be just garbage. But because Fannie and Freddie were backed once again by this implicit understanding that Washington would not allow them to fail, they were able to do this. And they were pretty much, if you will, these twin engines that were pumping up these mortgage and refinancing bubbles during the 1990s and the early years of this decade, this century. And now Fannie and Freddie have liabilities of $5.3 trillion, that's T, trillion with a T, dollars. It's literally an astronomical sum. It's roughly half of the acknowledged national debt, an amount that is roughly equivalent to half of the acknowledged national debt, although the national debt is, in terms of our unfunded liabilities, is several times that amount. But the acknowledged national debt being a little bit more than $10 trillion, Fannie and Freddie together have liabilities that are roughly half that size. And if the federal government outright nationalizes Fannie and Freddie or simply takes on the obligations of Fannie and Freddie, that would be adding half again as much to the national debt. And whether this is done incrementally or whether this is done in one fell swoop, at some point the federal government, the quasi-governmental public-private partnership, really the first fascist institution of any note was the Federal Reserve. That's what a public-private partnership is. It's fascism. They are going to be monetizing these obligations at some point. Right now all they're saying is that they're backstopping, to use my word. I don't think they've actually used the expression. I think that's descriptive of what they're doing. They're backstopping Fannie and Freddie. They're simply opening up more discount windows to the Federal Reserve. They're offering money to people to go up and buy up shares in Fannie and Freddie so as to keep them viable, because their stock price has fallen once again in sort of a waterfall configuration as it did 5 years ago in June of 2003. And at some point, they're going to start taking on certain parts of Fannie and Freddie's obligations. They're going to be guaranteeing them. And what they're basically doing is they're being coy about their ultimate intention, which is to nationalize Fannie and Freddie. This is something that is almost inevitable. Once again, that's the logic of passing through this event horizon on the way to a financial black hole. At some point, you reach a point of no return. When you get to the point where earlier this year, Bear Stearns essentially had to be bailed out by the Federal Reserve, because if they weren't, they'd collapse, they'd ignite rather a brush fire or an outright holocaust in the derivatives market. That meant that to anybody else who was in a similar situation because of accumulated bad debts would be getting a bailout by the Federal Reserve. Now you have Fannie and Freddie, who have liabilities in the trillions of dollars. If Fannie and Freddie are too big to be allowed to fail, then it just stands to reason that some of the other big boys like Citibank and Lehman Brothers, you know the rest of the litany, these guys are going to be queuing up and they're going to be getting bailed up and fed again. I mean, actually, the financial black hole will occur when the Federal Reserve just simply nationalizes the entire investment sector, and I think that's the direction we're heading. I don't see anything between where we are and that destination that would stop us from getting there, quite frankly.
Well, of course, the thing is that it's going to be really hyperinflationary, and this is the problem. In fact, the reports just came out. You know, they're looking at the producer price index and the consumer price index, and I think that one of them was about 1.8% in 1 month, which, of course, if looked at for a year, is to over 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure which one it was, but they just announced this. In other words, what they're really talking about is the early stages of hyperinflation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've shared with you an anecdote that I think illustrates that, the fact that a few weeks ago, we went on a family trip down to California, and on our way to Los Angeles, I made a point of stopping at various convenience stores and asking clerks how frequently they were seeing $50 bills. $50 bills are not a commonplace denomination for most people, at least they weren't until recently. But what they were saying is that they are seeing $50 bills now as frequently as they saw $20 bills just 6 months ago. And, of course, if you run that out, this is an anecdote, but this is the sort of raw, unprocessed data that eventually becomes, you know, hard economic statistics. If you take that and run the math on it, eventually you're going to be looking at something that will take on the form of a hyperinflationary curve. And people can't keep up with that. Already the treadmill is going faster than most people can maintain, and the level of difficulty is increasing as the treadmill altitude increases as well, the degree of difficulty. And I think that now, after all this time, after 5 or 6 years of many people warning about the trends that were very much visible decades ago, that have become very acutely visible earlier this decade, now people are starting to realize just how badly off we really are, because we really don't have any assets as a population here. We don't have any savings. We have a negative savings rate. We have had a negative savings rate for several years. There's no more credit available in order for people to defer paying what they owe. There's no more equity available in terms of the homes that people thought that they owned, now that the bubble has burst and home prices are collapsing across the nation. And now the people who would be in charge of giving them the loans, even if they were inclined to issue loans, the banks can't get credit as well, unless, of course, what they're doing is they're getting money simply to stay solvent so that the bank collapse doesn't occur before the election. I think that's basically what we're looking at right now, is a huge dilatory strategy on the part of the political establishment simply to defer the day of reckoning until after the election this fall, assuming, of course, that there isn't a faction that wants to precipitate the crisis more quickly so as to have a pretext for canceling the election. Who knows? I'm not really in a position where I can look through the opaque layers of the inner sanctum of the evil people running our government to know if that's not the intention here. But I really think that there is sort of a bipartisan understanding here that they want to defer this until after the election. But I don't think it's going to wait that long. I really think that by September or October of this year, things are going to be so acutely, pungently bad that there are going to be some dramatic things that will happen here to our political culture. And I really am not anywhere near wise enough or prescient enough to tell you how that's going to break. But nonetheless, it is going to be fascinating in a terrifying kind of way.
Well, I think we can pretty well anticipate what the establishment wants by what happens to the price of oil. They could bring the price of oil down tomorrow if they wanted to. In fact, the last couple of days, it's been coming down. Mm-hmm. Will they try to get the market at least halfway stabilized and keep the Dow Jones from collapsing before the election? If they want to get John McCain in, that's exactly what they're going to do. And then, the next thing down the line is, are they going to get us into a war with Iran to rally the people behind the government, and with the idea that, after all, if you were at war with Iran, would you rather have John McCain, the military man in office, or would you rather have a wimpy guy like Obama? Well, I think most people, if we were at war, would probably tend more to go with McCain. This is just my gut feeling, and I could be wrong, but my gut feeling is that, you know, certainly it weren't McCain's fault that we were there, but we were, by one means or another, hoodwinked into getting to a war with Iran, or Iran went to war with us. I think it would be great for McCain's possibility to become the next president of the United States. And I sort of suspect that that's exactly what they're planning. But it's going to be fascinating as this thing plays out. We're going to be back here in just a moment with William Grigg, certainly one of our favorite guests, one of our favorite people, and certainly I hope yours as well. So don't even think about changing that dial. We'll be back in just 4 minutes right here at Genesis.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Black Berkey purification elements are more powerful than any gravity filter element on the market. These awesome elements are used in Berkey purification systems, and they can also be used to upgrade most other gravity filtration systems. They can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, trihalomethanes, and chemicals such as chlorine, atrazine, styrene, and MTBE. These elements also reduce unwanted heavy metals such as lead, mercury, and aluminum. Unbelievably, they even remove small microparticulate from water like food coloring particles. Yet, they leave in the nutritional minerals that your body needs. Moreover, because they are recleanable, Black Berkey elements are more economical than the standard disposable elements, providing fresh, pure water for less than 2 cents per gallon.
Get a 2-pack for only $99 or a 4-pack for only $188 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Have you ever suffered from giardia, food poisoning, heavy metal poisoning, arthritis, fatigue, or high cholesterol? Maybe you're one of the 75 million Americans that the Center for Disease Control reports is suffering from internal parasites. If so, Freshwater Organics is proud to introduce you to a million-year-old miracle that has been used all over the world by health-conscious individuals seeking alternatives to chemicals and drugs. FPP, or fossilized phytoplankton powder, is a 100% natural, organic product with absolutely no additives. When taken daily, it is an excellent source of natural plant-based silica with 14 trace minerals. Many believe it is the key to a healthy digestive tract. To find an FPP distributor near you, or to buy it now online, go to www.freshwaterorganics.com. You can also call toll-free at 888-949-3570. That's 888-949-3570.
As many people know, ever since President Nixon took us off the gold standard, the U.S. dollar has been devaluating. What people don't know, however, is how this directly affects your personal finances. Is there a way to prevent your portfolios from losing value? The answer to all of this is gold and silver. They have both maintained their purchasing power for 6,000 years. If you had had $100,000 in cash and $100,000 in gold and silver back in 1913 and kept them both until now, your cash would actually have the buying power of only $4,800, but your gold and silver would have the buying power of $3 million. The answer to protecting your assets is simple. Call me, John Ballman, today at 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Get all your questions answered before your money is worth zero. Call 1-800-686-2237, extension 169. Take action today while we still accept paper dollars for gold. That's 1-800-686-2237, extension 169.
Dr. Stan at the Genesis Communication Network. Our guest is William Greig. We're talking about what's going on financially. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, certainly we saw IndyMac go down last Friday. There are a number of other banks that are just sort of waiting. Some people are talking about WaMu, that's Washington Mutual.
Yeah.
Other people are talking about Wachovia. Many of our banks are in real financial problems. People over in Europe are beginning to pull their money out of the major banks in the United States, because most of the major banks, and we're talking about the J.P. Morgan, Chase, Chase Manhattan, of course, I suppose that's J.P. Morgan Chase now, but certainly Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch, and all of these are having real financial problems, and nobody wants to talk about it. You go right ahead, pick the story up there.
Yeah, we have to talk about it, and we're, of course, pushing against an open door because nobody else is around to address this in a candid and forthright way. But when we saw the collapse of the IndyMac Bank last week, what I thought was really interesting was that within 2 or 3 days, it had been nationalized, or as we now call it, federalized. It's now a federally operated bank that was done just in the course of 48 or 72 hours. And then this was all taking place in the shadow of renewed discussion about the insolvency. That's the word used by William Poole from the St. Louis Fed. He used that expression to describe the condition of Fannie and Freddie. He said they're insolvent. And he'd said the same thing 5 years ago. As a matter of fact, he said the same thing in 2002. I believe it was in March of that year that he gave a lecture. William Poole from the Federal Reserve, one of the members of the Federal Reserve Board, gave a lecture in which he talked about the condition of Fannie and Freddie, and he said that basically, by common accounting standards, they have to be considered insolvent. And it took over a year for that set of remarks to penetrate the public consciousness that had been embargoed for public distribution. And then when the financial condition of Fannie and Freddie was widely known, their stock price dropped precipitously. It was really quite a remarkable thing. It was like a hockey stick. It was a 90-degree fall in their stock price in the course of a couple of days. And what had been going on between 1998 and then roughly 2004 is that under Franklin D. Raines, the chairman of Fannie Mae, political appointee who was part of this nomenclatura, this insulated political elite that runs these institutions, they had made the primary goal of Fannie and Freddie boosting their apparent profitability in order to boost executive compensation. They were using the same kind of corrupt thaumaturgical tricks that were being used by Enron in order to do the same type of thing. They were ripping off their shareholders and ripping off their investors in order to boost the bottom line of the elite, the executive elite of Fannie Mae, through corrupt bookkeeping. On my blog a couple of days ago, I published a little excerpt from a speech that was delivered in 2000 that was a pep talk for employees of Fannie Mae talking about how they wanted to make sure that they achieved a profit per share price of 6.46, and that was just an arbitrary number in the sense that it had nothing to do with the actual performance of the company. But if they maintained that level of profitability per share, then the executive compensation that they desired would kick in. They'd get automatic bonuses of all sorts that would be shared with several of the top echelons of the employees of that company. And this is, of course, a species of fraud, because they were not performing up to that level. That's simply the level at which the bonuses would kick in. Well, the person giving that prep talk there at this government-supported, implicitly taxpayer-subsidized entity was the guy who was in charge of the internal auditing of Fannie Mae. He was the guy who was supposed to be the chief watchdog, and he was addressing their board of auditors. These are the people who are supposedly keeping the books clean. These are the people who are supposed to be the first line of defense against corporate fraud. And here this guy was giving them a pep talk and reciting the talking points coming down from Franklin Raines, the top-level management of Fannie Mae, about the supposed virtue of committing fraud in order to keep their profitability up so everybody would get the bonuses that they craved. That had been going on for years, of course. And when the insolvency and corruption of Fannie and Freddie became news back in 2003, their stock prices collapsed, and there were congressional inquiries, and there were testimonies that were gathered on Capitol Hill. There was a report that was published. There were solemn promises made of reform. Franklin Raines got a slap on his wrist. He made $52.8 million in bonuses above and beyond his extravagant salary while he was ripping off the shareholders of Fannie Mae and running this institution into the ground. He was required to turn over, I think, a couple of $100,000 as a penalty for his fraud. And that was it. He had to turn over some deferred stock options as well that were by that time fundamentally worthless. But, of course, there are people in prison right now who did exactly the same kind of thing that he did that were crimes of a much lesser magnitude than what Franklin Raines did. And that helps explain why Fannie and Freddie ended up with these trillions of dollars in bad obligations, and they're now insolvent.
We'll be right back.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Now you can enjoy the most delicious, freshest, and healthiest drinking water anytime, even while traveling, during outdoor sporting activities, and in hospital filtration environments such as local or national emergencies. The revolutionary Berkey Light removes pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful or unwanted chemicals to below detectable levels. It also removes foul tastes and odors like that rotten egg smell of sulfide, and it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving in the healthful and nutritional minerals your body needs. The Berkey Light is so powerful it can purify raw, untreated water from remote lake streams and stagnant ponds. The Berkey Light is transparent and glows in the dark with its rechargeable LED lighting system, so it can be used as a night light or camp light.
Get the Berkey Light purifier for only $279. Call New Millennium 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Go to hempusa.org, go to hempusa.org, and ask your legislator, and ask your congressman, and ask your president, why can't we grow it here? And ask those companies that love their profits and disease. why can't we grow it here? Try our powder, seeds, and oil. Try our 5-pound sampler. And get free shipping anywhere in the States. Go to hempusa.org. Go to hempusa.org. And call us at 908-691-2608. Call 908-691-2608 or visit us at hempusa.org.
Well, Dr. Stan is back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and as I always do, I always mention that many of the ads that are heard on during these segments here at Genesis are not my ads, the Genesis Network's ads, so we don't necessarily endorse them. We don't necessarily oppose them. You're going to have to make the decision on your own. But, of course, you will know my ads by my voice is there. But the others, well, anyway, let's get, of course, to William Gregg. And, William, before we go on, I'd like you to get your blog site out so people would know how to get in touch with you and put in a plug for your book, Liberty in Eclipse.
I really appreciate that. My blog is entitled Pro Libertate. That's Latin. It means for freedom. And I publish something new on there between 3 and 5 times a week as my schedule permits. The easiest way to get to it would be to go to freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Once again, Freedom in Our Time is one word, freedominourtime.blogspot, blogspot.com. Or you can go by way of the homepage of the Welsh Foundation, which is entitled The Right Source. I serve as an editor-at-large for The Right Source, and the URL for The Right Source is rightsourceonline.com. If you go to The Right Source website and scroll about a third of the way down the page, you'll find my photograph, and there's a hyperlink that will take you right to my blog spot. And Pro Libertate differs from most blogs in that I aspire to write something that would be a publication quality for a print magazine, a print journal, that takes the character of an investigative work with a polemical edge. I call it investigative polemics. I write as an editorial writer. I don't conceal my point of view. These are opinion pieces. But I try to source what I say and, where possible, to hyperlink to something that will confirm assertions that I make, or when I make reference to a print work, such as a journal or a book, the contents of which is not online, I will often give you page information. I'll say, look at page such and such, or pages such and such in a given book or in a given journal. And the reason I'm doing this is because I want people to be mad about what's happening in this ubiquitous assault on our freedoms and our prosperity, and I want them to have something that is substantive, something that is documented or documentable, that they can use by way of reaching out to people who are also susceptible of being usefully angry about what's going on. We're not going to be able to save anything that we cherish unless we get usefully angry. If we are angry in a way that has a focus, that is rooted in facts, and that is, of course, informed by principle, and I'm trying to provide that type of writing in Pro Libertate. If you go to the Right Source homepage, at the top of that page, you'll find a banner ad for my new book, Liberty in Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. You can click through that banner ad to order the book from the Welsh Foundation, which published the book. You can also order the book, your listeners can order the book, through Radio Liberty and also through Amazon.com. The book is about 300 pages long, and as the title would suggest, it deals primarily with the creation of what many people would call a police state. I prefer to call it a garrison state in the sense that we're no longer talking about police in the traditional sense of locally accountable civilian peace officer units that are devoted to the protection of persons and property. Now we have a state which is pretty much militarized and centrally directed through the Homeland Security Department and also through the Pentagon by way of subsidy and regulation of local police departments, and also by way of permitting police departments to fund themselves through tremendously corrupt enterprises such as asset forfeiture. And now we have a situation where we're actually living inside of a garrison. It's almost as if our country has been turned in some critical ways into an armed military camp. And if you go to an airport, you'll certainly experience a hands-on application of that ethic. That's one reason I don't fly commercially anymore. I just can't stand that. I've been in societies, I've lived in countries where there is a form of martial law underway, and I've just developed a severe histaminic reaction to tyranny. I'm allergic to it, and so I try to minimize my exposure to it. That's becoming very difficult. But the point of that book, once again, is to show how this is not something which is because of 9/11. The world didn't change on September 11, 2001. What happened is that there was a very useful and suitable pretext and a ready-made narrative to serve the interests of the people who have been trying to bring about the militarization of our police and the federalization of control over our police and the conversion of what had been a flawed but commendable and wonderful republic into a version of an executive-dominated police state, to use the common expression. So that book is available through the Right Source. Once again, rightsourceonline.com. It's also available through Radio Liberty, and it can also be purchased on Amazon.com.
All right, fine. Well, should we get back to what's happening as far as the economy is concerned?
Yeah, we have to, because these subjects are all very much interdependent. When you talk about the adulteration of the currency we use to conduct our business transactions, you're talking about theft and fraud on a massive scale that is institutionalized and carried out by the government that rules us. And that, of course, corrupts everything that happens. That of necessity is going to corrupt how the law is administered in our country. Shakespeare, in, I believe it was Measure for Measure, pointed out that thieves for their robbery have license when judges steal themselves. And so if a government is involved in the continual adulteration of the currency, that is to say, the theft of value from the currency that we use, and the maintenance of a system where this type of theft and fraud are institutionalized, then everybody who works for the government is a partaker of that fraud, a participant in this crime against the governed. And in recent years, and I've been talking in the previous segment about what was going on at Fannie and Freddie by way of this monumental federally sponsored accounting fraud that is completely unpunished, unlike what happened with Enron and WorldCom and Tyco and Global Crossing and a number of other corporations who were carrying out pretty much the same type of business. Fannie and Freddie, of course, were exempt because of their specially protected status with the federal government. Franklin Raines didn't pay anything by way of a significant price for the criminal enterprise he's running at Fannie Mae. Now the taxpayers are going to have to pick it up because we've got the federal government now backstopping Fannie and Freddie en route to nationalizing them through monetizing their obligations and making us pay for the crimes that were committed by Fannie and Freddie.
But I think, by the way, we really should explain to our listeners that when you talk about monetizing, you're really talking about the fact that they're just going to create new money to pay off the debts, to pay out, to keep this thing going. But it's going to be, you know, the destruction of the value of our currency and leading ultimately to inflation and then hyperinflation and then catastrophic inflation. And people don't understand, whenever you begin to monetize anything, you begin stealing from the people by the invisible tax they call inflation.
That's exactly right. That is the tax that eats your savings while you sleep. That makes you poor every single night. When your head hits the pillow every night, when you're trying to get a few fugitive hours of rest before waking up the next day and resuming your productive labors, the parasites who run our government are stealing out of your bank account. They're stealing out of everything you have earned and everything you have put away in terms not only of your savings, but any other assets that you have that are denominated in the currency that is being inflated. And so when I talk about monetizing the obligations of Fannie and Freddie, and probably, you know, take a look at the conga line of banks that are going to come and right in the queue behind Fannie and Freddie, and also some of these other larger enterprises, like the big three automakers. The airlines are all going to collapse. You're talking about the generation through this magical printing press or this magical computer program at the Federal Reserve of a huge volume of so-called dollars that will destroy the value of those that we own, because we're on the receiving end of inflation. The government gets the first best use of inflation. It gets to use the money while it's still fresh before its value has been completely destroyed. And then those who are immediately involved in the distribution of these inflated dollars, the high-end investment banks and a few select commercial enterprises, will get the second best use of it. And then after them, of course, come the politically connected corporations who are the beneficiaries of this inflation, and their top echelon people. And then after that, of course, somewhere down the line, we are the last link, in the great chain of being from the perspective of the people who rule us. And if Fannie and Freddie get taken into receivership, and this is something that the Wall Street Journal, which people for some reason insist on treating as if it were a capitalist publication. It is not. It is a corporatist publication. It believes in corporate socialism, socialism for the politically connected and uber-rich. They're talking about the supposed need for a receivership for Fannie and Freddie. They're talking about here is something that would basically pay off the people who are part of the financial entente that would be running Fannie and Freddie under direct federal control, and all the shareholders, the people who made the mistake of buying stock in Fannie and Freddie, of course, would lose everything. But the people who lose the most, of course, would be the productive, working, tax-paying citizens of the country who are going to have the value of the dollars they earn, the value of the dollars they save and invest destroyed by this process, which is just par for the course. It's just a more emphatic version of the same type of treatment we've been receiving since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913. The other part of the story I find just fascinating is the way that the enforcement agencies, the federal government, and also local law enforcement are behaving now as we see this accelerating descent into the financial black hole. Once we pass the event horizon en route to the bottom of the gravity well, over the weekend, the Securities and Exchange Commission put out a memo explaining that they were going to start investigating and perhaps prosecuting people who were circulating what they call false information about, among other things, Fannie and Freddie. This is, of course, what they're talking about as a supposed conspiracy to, quote, manipulate securities prices. And just in the recent last couple of days, actually, the SEC has talked about how they're now investigating people who've been short-selling Fannie and Freddie. You'd have to be an idiot if you're going to be having any kind of financial undertakings, any financial dealings relevant to Fannie and Freddie, not to be selling them short. Jim Rogers, the legendary investment guru who said that we ought to let Fannie and Freddie collapse, has said, yeah, I've been short Fannie and Freddie for years. I mean, are they going to investigate him? Well, they can't. He's in Singapore. He's outside their jurisdiction. But if you're intelligent and watching what's going on, you have to be selling short. But now that's considered to be a species of crime because the federal government has ordained that those entities must survive. And so I you have a patriotic imperative to throw your money away investing in Fannie and Freddie and to speak no ill of them, because if you do, the SEC will start investigating you. And then you take a look at what's going on with the collapse of IndyMac there in Pasadena. You have the police out in force now as people are queuing up to get their money out of this mortally stricken bank, which is the only intelligent course of action, is to get all your money out of IndyMac and any other bank that shows similar symptoms of failing. And what the police have said as these lines are stretched out is that if people don't remain calm, if they're not visibly calm and serene, if their disposition displays frustration or anger, that the police are going to arrest them for obstruction and public misconduct. I mean, you're not talking about people who are starting fights. You're not talking about people who are issuing threats or going on a rampage. If you're not visibly calm, the police are going to arrest you. And, of course, there are a few things that are better calculated to undermine the calm of somebody in a situation like this, a crisis like this, than a threat to the effect that if they don't maintain an air of placid docility, then the local gendarmerie is going to send their armed goons in to drag you away to jail for doing nothing. It's just perverse, but this is the sort of thing that we're going to be seeing a lot more of as this crisis accelerates and as our predicament deepens. We're going to find out just how deeply inured the people who are in charge of enforcing the law right now have become to statist ethics, and how thoroughly owned they are by the criminals who are running the government that rules us.
Well, you know,
really,
I think
it's
what
a frightening
prospect,
but it shouldn't surprise anybody who's a student of history, even in a superficial sense.
Well, I think one of the interesting things that nobody's talking about, of course, is that the government intervention here will certainly lead to, I think, a very, very profound losses by many of the stockholders.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're doing is giving a free ride to the bondholders, and the people who hold the bonds are entirely different than the people who hold the stocks. I mean, the bonds are largely held by our large investment corporations. I mean, Goldman Sachs and all of the usual suspects there, the investment banks,
the
ones who hold the bonds, they don't hold the stock. The bondholders are going to be rewarded, and they're going to certainly come out do it very well. But the stockholders are really going to be very badly hurt.
Well, the biggest foreign holder of bonds in Fannie and Freddie, of course, is our good friends in Beijing. I can't remember how many hundreds of billions of dollars that they have thrown into Fannie and Freddie, buying up bonds, buying the debt from Fannie and Freddie. But yeah, they're right at the top of the list. They're, I believe it's China and then Japan, and I can't remember which of the satrapies or emirates over in the Persian Gulf was next on the list. But ironically enough, I think Belgium is in there somewhere. But China, as is almost always the case when you're talking about buying up U.S. debt, they're right at the top of the list of foreign holders of bonds in Fannie and Freddie. And so what the bailout will do is it will enrich once again the barbarians in Beijing at the expense of U.S. taxpayers, and of course at the expense of the people who own stock in those entities as well.
And anybody who owns stock in that, I mean, they've just really taken, they're down probably 80-90% in the value of their stock at least. And it may very well end up disappearing.
That's about the size of it. And it really, once again, is a foretaste of what's to come. It's a very mild foretaste of something that's going to become increasingly unpalatable as this crisis unfolds. Dr. Stan, just for very quickly, I wanted to hijack the conversation, go off in a completely different direction. What do you think, speaking of the presidential election, of the idea that John McCain is ineligible to be president of the United States by being born, by virtue of being born in the Panama Canal Zone before formal U.S. citizenship was extended to people born in that region?
Well,
and how would that affect the outcome of the election this fall?
Well, but then there's even a question, is Obama really a legitimate citizen either?
Yeah.
And I think that they will simply change the law, however, the establishment. Well, it doesn't matter whether it's legal or not. It doesn't even matter whether he's eligible to run. They will alter the law. They'll come up with some judges who will say, oh, yes, he's perfectly a legitimate. So they don't care about the law,
well, yeah,
as you
it's
well
sort of
know.
It's silly me to be cavilling over issues of the law when I've just finished this lengthy harangue talking about the fundamentally criminal nature of the state that rules us. But I do think it's interesting that you have here a situation where, by a strict reading of the Constitution, facially, he's ineligible, McCain is, but the Senate earlier this year, I think it was in February or March, issued some kind of an anodyne resolution to the effect that they consider him to be eligible, and that should end the matter. And the reason why, according to the Senate, this resolution is that the founders would never have denied access to the presidency to somebody who is the child of military U.S. military personnel stationed abroad. And I thought that was ludicrous. I mean, it's risible because the founders of this country never imagined would be garrisoning troops abroad. They didn't even envision that we'd have a permanent standing army. They envisioned we'd have a standing navy, but they were suspicious of a standing army, much less this imperial force that would be sown in garrisons throughout the entire world, whether you're talking about South America or Europe or the Middle East. But I just thought it'd be interesting if that's the sort of a liability that could be somebody's trump card in the event that we end up with a really closely contested election this fall. I was just interested to see if you'd given that any thought beyond the obvious that these people are not in any way restrained by the law and they will treat the law as malleable.
Well, I'm afraid that is the case. We're in real trouble, of course, because we have people at the highest levels of our government who don't believe in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And, of course, they make mockery of it. And certainly I think that Senate resolution, good old boys club, you know, good old John McCain. Both the Democrats and the Republicans love him because he's closer to the Democrats than the Republicans. We're out of time. God bless. Talk to you Friday. Bye-bye.
Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case it's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
Did you know that pH balance is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health? Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 9 or higher. plasma pH drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals and elements. This product is a one of a kind in its strength and effectiveness. Using plasma pH drops is one of the best ways to make your water alkaline while helping you get rid of acid and regaining your health and energy. With just 10 drops, you can raise the pH level of the water you drink up to the pH of 10. Alkalizing water helps the body rid itself of acidic waste and increases the oxygen content of your body. Disease organisms like bacteria and cancer cannot survive in an alkaline environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-344-3420 today.
Terrorism, terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video sheltering in place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and of course this is the time when I need to remind our listeners, Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help to do what we do, but we've got over 60 outlets every single week, and we're reaching people all across America, and quite frankly, we need your help. So if you want to join the Radio Liberty family and be part of our team, our number 1-800-544-8927. Now, if you want to know what really happened on September 11th, believe me, they knew exactly what was going to happen. In fact, I just have something here from a little pamphlet we put out. It's called The True Story of 911. True Story of 911. If you haven't got it, you need to get it. It's only $3.95 plus shipping. But Richard Haass, who back in 1965 was working as a consultant for the Council on Foreign Relations, today is chairman of the board, but back in August 4th, 1996, Richard Haass wrote an article that was published in the Washington Post and republished in the Palm Beach Post, and this is what it said. Now remember, this is 5 years before September 11th, 2001. The war against terrorism is a war with an unlimited number of battles, none of them decisive. People will have to accept longer lines before entering buildings, longer delays at airports, more intrusive searches of belongings at our persons, and higher ticket prices to pay for all of this. Greater vigilance will also involve a willingness to compromise some of our civil liberties, including accepting more frequent phone taps and surveillance. And so the move towards the police state was planned long ahead of time. If you want to know what really happened on September 11th, you go to our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Scroll down to other videos, not videos, but other videos, and then scroll down to building number 7 and watch it come down and understand this was a controlled demolition. It was a controlled demolition, and if Building 7 was a controlled demolition, then what happened to the other buildings that fell symmetrically, didn't tilt to one side or the other, fell symmetrically at the speed of gravity. And there, of course, we have pictures of them coming down. You can see the puffs of the explosions of the windows, you know, 20 floors below where the building is collapsing up above. But they can't let the American people think, because remember, it's too horrible to contemplate that our leaders, some people, I'm not saying who, but some people were willing to kill 3,000 Americans to get us into the war in the Middle East, which ultimately will lead to a war with the Muslim world. You need to get our material, first of all, our pamphlets, Foreknowledge 911, there's $9.95 for all three pamphlets. Our pamphlet, The True Story of 911, and of course that's available for $3.95. And then, of course, you need to get the book we carry called The Terror Timeline, excellent book, very important book. That gives you more information, of course, the Seed of Evil by Robert Baer, the CIA agent, who tells you how one of the leaders of the CIA said, off the record, that when the dust finally clears after September 11th, the people will finally realize this wasn't a failure of intelligence. This was a triumph of intelligence. 3,000 Americans dead, but of course, and I'm just, this is my quote, my remarks is, because this was going to get us into the war with in the Middle East, and ultimately, of course, lead to World War III. This is what it's all about. And you need, of course, to get our book, The Devil's Game, very important, pointing out how, of course, the CIA, MI6, and other agencies finance this Muslim movement from its very beginning. The book, The Devil's Game. We have the material, ladies and gentlemen. We need you to help us get it out. So remember our numbers, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. And if you, of course, haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you should. Or get the DVD. You need to watch our story of the forbidden secret. And we've got a great new DVD. It's called Secret Knowledge. That's the forbidden secret, which comes with a syllabus, and secret knowledge, which comes without a syllabus. But they will begin taking you into the occult world, the real world, where the battle for the survival of Western civilization is being fought today.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water...